I'm Brian McCreath. I'm at Symphony Hall with Hannu Lintu, who's here with the Boston Symphony for the very first time. And Hannu, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time after rehearsal to talk with me today. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a great joy to meet you.
So this is your first time here in Boston, and I think it's I'd love to hear a little bit about where you're coming from. And you grew up in Finland, and now you're the music director of the Finnish Radio Symphony. But tell me about your first experiences and what drew you into conducting in the very first place.
Oh, well, I started to play piano when I was 4, and then I took cello when I was 7. And naturally, when I took cello, I immediately started to play in youth orchestras. So I saw conductors from, you know, the very beginning. Of course, I saw poor conductors because some of those were really bad. But then, you know, one day, I think I was 9 or 10, my parents took me to an opera festival called Savonlinna Opera Festival. It's one of the greatest opera festivals in Europe. It's in Finland. And we went there, and I heard the performance of Don Carlos by Verdi, conducted by a maestro called Leif Segerstam. And I have no idea what happened in Don Carlos, because I was just staring Leif Segerstam in the pit, because that was the first time, because I had already seen conductors, but this was the first time I saw a conductor who makes difference, conductor who obviously is needed, I mean, both logistically and, you know, because it was a huge opera performance and an open air stage, but also musically. And I realized that, wow, these guys really can do something, and they are needed and they are respected. Well, not necessarily always respected, but they achieve things. And of course, nobody 9-year-old, of course, you know, really in their right mind would decide that now I want to become a conductor. But that was the seed. When I started to think that maybe that is something I would like to do one day. And I was speaking to my teachers, my instrument teachers, about it, and they said, now, Hannu, you should just study instruments, study counterpoint, you know, study solfège. And after the school, I went to the Sibelius Academy to study piano and cello, and finally applied to the conducting class. And in Finland, it has always been very, very important that conductors play orchestral instruments. So I was lucky to have the cello. I was probably 22 when I got into the conducting class. So it was a journey of 13 years from when I actually decided that I would like to become a conductor. But I didn't think about it that much. I think it was just a goal that was somewhere inside me, and it was just subconsciously reminding me once in a while that there are things you need to learn if you want to become a conductor. So I wasn't thinking about it every day, but it really goes way back.
Yeah, and how fortunate that you happen to live in a place and grow up in a place where there's this Sibelius Academy with one of the most famous conducting teachers in the world, Jorma Panula. And so it seems like a pretty natural fit, but did you realize how lucky you were at the time?
I realize it now. I mean, because when I went to the academy and I wasn't yet in the conducting class, I was playing in the conducting class orchestra. I was playing cello there. I got paid, you know, I paid my rent with that. And I saw, I became friends with conducting students, and I saw Mr. Panula's teaching from the very beginning of my academy career. And that actually taught me a lot as well. I saw, you know, how young, shaking teenagers suddenly, you know, started to have more self-confidence and musical ideas, and then I got to know Mr. Panula, and it was a privilege to talk to him before I applied to the class, because he was able to tell me which things are important in the entrance exam, I didn't have to go abroad to study conducting. I mean, it was such a... And now I realize that, you know, all the conductors from abroad, I mean, foreign conductors I know, they have studied here and there in Vienna and London and in Siena and Paris. And we never went anywhere. We were just in Helsinki. We had the greatest possible teacher. We had Jorma Panula, and our guest professor was Ilya Musin from St. Petersburg, teacher of Gergiev and Temirkanov, and, you know, the Pope of conducting, and he was already 92 years old, and he came 4 times a year. So we had ideal combination of teachers, and we had orchestra 2 times a week, and then of course being in Finland, where orchestras want to trust young conductors. I mean, we got job immediately. I mean, immediately, actually, a young conductor goes to a conducting class, starts in a conducting class. The Finnish orchestra start to call you. It's some province orchestras, of course, but and they are not that good. But they give you a job, you know, and you can do your first mistakes in Lapland or, you know, and, you know, so somewhere, you know, 5,000 miles from the capital, and then you don't have to do your first mistakes in London.
Right. Well, I guess every field needs someplace like that, but it also does speak to the way that Finland values music and is so ingrained in the culture.
Yeah, I mean, those orchestra musicians, they want to give us job, but they're also very critical. I mean, after the concert, they come to you and they say, look, you can't even rehearse, and you know, your technique, you know, when you beat in three, I can't understand this or that. But would you like to come back next year? So they want to. We have such a long conducting tradition that also orchestral musicians, they want to participate in our education. They are proud about it.
Yeah. So the Concerto for Orchestra by Bartok, it's a piece that, as I'm sure you know, is has its origins right here in this hall. And yet, if you were to try to describe it to somebody who didn't know it, you might start by saying, well, it features every part of the orchestra and it's very virtuosic and it's very brilliant. But there's a lot of pieces like that. So what do you feel like Bartok did with this piece to make it rise to the level of a real masterpiece of the last century?
The more I conduct it, the more I start to appreciate the ingenious way how he puts together rhythms and how he uses a very short rhythmical modules, I call them modules, and how he's variating them all the time without actually any logic. Because usually if you take a Beethoven symphony or a Haydn symphony or even a Mahler symphony, there is certain logic. I mean, you can for instance memorize things by just putting those modules into a row and then rewriting those, but you can't do that in Bartok because he is all the time doing things differently. He has irritating amount of imagination, and the way how he orchestrates. I think that in 20th century there was Stravinsky and there was Bartok. I mean, the way how he combines instruments. And this is concerto fact. It's an other matter. I mean, it's of course fun for the audience because it also measures the quality of orchestra. You know, flutes sound in our orchestra like this, and clarinets like this, and they are proud of their principal trumpet and flute. And especially here, I can imagine. I mean. In Finland, we have the same situation, like Helsinki Philharmonic, which is not my orchestra, but they used to premiere all Sibelius symphonies, except number 7. And they have the same kind of pride. I mean, there isn't actually much difference if the orchestra premiered something 100 years ago or not. I mean, right. They are not the same musicians. And they're surprisingly... I mean, there isn't much this kind of information which comes from the premiere. You know, Kusevitsky did this or that, or in Finland, Kajanus did this or that. But the thing is that these orchestras, it's in their blood in a way that they are always interested in doing it in a different way. They know the musical possibilities of the piece. They probably hate doing it in the same way every time. And we have the same in the Sibelius symphonies. I once conducted Grieg in Bergen, where, again, the same thing. And what I've noticed is that orchestras, which should have probably think that they own these pieces, they are also very flexible. But I think at the moment, I tend to think, you know, Bartok, this score is like one of the great novels of the literature. You take something by Dostoevsky or Tolstoy or Shakespeare, and you have to read them 2 dozens of times before you understand anything. And each time you read, you find something new. You can't avoid it, but you always approach it from different angle. And this happens with great scores. You open it, and suddenly you go different route this time, and you learn new things. And this score is so full of details that, you know, I always find something I never noticed before. What the hell is that? It wasn't there last time, but now it's there. And Sibelius has the same ability, but it's just it gives me endless joy And for me, this concerto aspect is not that important as it that probably is for orchestra.
Yeah. You recently put together a series of short videos that I really like, and they're all about what it is to do your job. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, very short little things on very specific aspects, studying scores and rehearsing. The thing that surprised me the most when I took a look at those is in one of the videos, you say that the dress rehearsal is always the absolute worst. And so I tell you a little bit about that, but I have to tell you the question that I wondered when I, right when you said that in the video is, well, when did you figure that out, and how painful was that?
Well, my background is that I used to panic before every rehearsal when I was a young conductor, and gradually things became easier and easier. But I suppose there is still something in the dress rehearsal. Because that is the rehearsal where, especially when you're working with an orchestra, you don't really know very well. That is the rehearsal where we summarize all we have been working during the week, and that is a rehearsal where you have to learn. That is the last moment for you to learn how to trust the orchestra, and I've noticed that some orchestras also are sometimes a little bit shaky and nervous in the dress rehearsal. Because they have this air of stress around them, and I'm really sensitive into this stress, and this results that usually I can't give everything I want in the dress rehearsal, which probably is good because I tend to give a lot in the concert, so I want to save the orchestra as well. But the older you become, the more you start to trust the fact that many things happen between the dress rehearsal and the concert. You know, musicians and conductor and soloists, they process things between the last rehearsal and the concert. When you learn this, you are less panicked after the dress rehearsal. But I was still, I mean, after the dress rehearsal this morning, I was nervous. I was terrified. And now I go to my hotel room and I will sleep. I will probably sleep at least 2 hours. And I get my adrenaline back, and in the concert I'm more relaxed. I don't know why this is, but I suspect that it is also something physiological, that my body works so that it wants to guarantee me the best possible conditions for the concert by giving me this shock in the dress rehearsal from which I have to recover and become a new person, a new man, a new conductor, fresh for the concert. This is my theory now.
And fair enough to change it later, but I should complete the thought just for any listeners to know that your next thought after that is then the magic really starts after that first downbeat and this, something really special happens. And I found it fascinating that the concept of all of these things working in your mind almost subconsciously between that dress rehearsal and the concert. So it's a really cool insight. Thank you for that. Yeah.
And also that going to the concert is a very practical moment. People very often, I think it is also one of those videos.
Yes, that's right.
People always ask me, "What are you thinking? Are you discussing with the spirit of Beethoven, or are you what? No, I'm thinking about the tempo of the first piece, and how do I technically, you know, because beginning of the concert is such a delicate moment. I mean, you don't want to ruin it. And you just have to be, I mean, basically, I don't think conducting is a very technical thing. I mean, this is not technical business. This is not about technique. I mean, think of great conductors like Karajan, Bernstein or Kleiber. I mean, they could express lots of things, but I don't think they had, you know, a great technique in a way than, let's say, Lorin Maazel, for instance, who had the most perfect technique on the planet ever. But you have to be able to start pieces so that people understand how they begin, and after that you can talk to the gods.
That's a great thought. I love that. Hannu Lintu, welcome to Boston, and it's great to have you here. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.